Good afternoon. This is Aaron Fitzpatrick here at Heritage Radio Network, leading in with a piece from Tasco Tango Orchestra called El Cholulo. This is the first episode of At the Root of It, which is a wine program on Heritage Radio Network. And I'm happy to have today Krešo Petrković from Vinum Imports, the top importer of Croatian and Slovenian wines. Krešo, how are you today?
Good. Great.
Good, thanks for coming by. Thought we would start this afternoon's program with just a brief discussion of where Croatian and Slovenian wines have been in the past decade, where they are now, and where you think they're going. Because a lot of people don't even know that Croatia makes wine, so...
Sure, I face that every day. And basically, you know, we are very unfortunate to have a war over there. We get into bad habits of going to war with our neighbors, or neighbors go to war with us, and then that stops everything. But since the communism basically took all the private ownership and everything went co-op, the top wine production was shut down for 40 years.
Hmm.
Where before that was very successful, and we were making a lot of, you know, there was a lot of great wine shipped all over Europe. And
so it wasn't just for local consumption, it was lots of exports.
Yeah, it was going to at a certain point some of the Slovenian vineyards were exclusively making wine for Roman emperors, and they only wanted it from there.
Mm-hmm.
And it traced back to Greece, so, you know, communism did its own bad things, but to our advantage, we have all these great old vineyards right now that got into the right hands and technology, and we're dealing with really old vines and top locations, and there's a lot of vineyards in the country. And basically, the only problem we have to do is, you know, do more of that. There's a lot of farmers that are growing vines, and they have lots of vineyards, and they don't have technology. So as soon as we kind of like get them and educate them to do better, we'll have more of high quality wine, where we're really in the lack of high quality wine in terms of quantity.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have enough wine to drink ourselves, and people drink a lot over there. It's kind of like
So right now there's investment into the industry, and you have a portfolio of some of the top producers coming out of Slovenia and Croatia.
Exactly.
And in the next 10 years, you foresee them becoming more and more important on the world stage.
Exactly, because, you know, when you're dealing, you can have a great wine, but if you don't have enough of it, mm-hmm. It's just not going to cut it on the world market. Where I think our niche in what we are trying to do, I'm definitely consulting all the winemakers there to go into more boutique style, and rather going into, you know, supermarkets and stores, going to top wine lists in the best places in the world, dealing with the best chefs. As you know, if you're an artist, I believe, which winemakers are great artists, I'd rather have my painting in the best gallery in the world,
sure.
and rather than, you know, all over the place, you know, just doesn't mean anything.
Mm-hmm.
So I really believe that's our niche. It's everything is going in the wine world, everything is going to have its own place. It's kind of like scattered around, people don't know what's going on. Even Italy, you know, it's grown big, and now it's kind of like
it's
in transition, and
mm-hmm.
And we are still growing. I think we are totally undiscovered, and we really produce old school wine. Everything is still in the hands of families, and it's they have the say. So
yeah.
Now it's basically, the, you know, whatever it was owned by the state, it got back to the families and or private, you know.
So now they're nurturing the vineyards and they're preserving the old vines that have existed and trying to proliferate them, basically.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, you mentioned in conversation that when the French speak of terroir, or winemakers in the U.S. speak of, you know, using terroir in their wines to really give the essence of where that wine is from. Croatian winemakers or Slovenian winemakers have just assumed that as natural part of the winemaking process. You ask them that question and they're kind of like, well, of course, you know, you're mentioning something about that.
They don't even know what terroir means.
Right.
Unless they went to a few wine seminars. It's incredible. I spend every year over there. My dad's a winemaker. I grew up in the vineyards. That the way we make wine, we get up in the morning, 6 a.m, you pick up a shovel, you go into the vineyard. That's what I call a winemaker. Everything else is a businessman. The mm-hmm. people that are in ownership of the big wineries are businessmen or either glamorous people. Wine is not made by fabulous people. It's made by farmers. And there's nothing fancy about that. These mm-hmm. people get up, get their donkey, they go into the vineyard, they stay there all day, they come back. And that's where the wine is made. And that's what terroir. That's what that whole thing means. Wine is made in the vineyard. And that's why our wines, if you go to one slope to another, it's completely different. It has nothing to do with each other. We even have winemakers that just have the same varietal grown, and almost, you know, vines are the same, and everything is just few you know, meters away, and you can't believe what the difference is. Mm-hmm. And that's what's terroir, you know. And some people are offended by that because that what brings taste. And I tell people, well, you know, that's wine. You mm-hmm. shouldn't be offended by taste, because then you should drink water, you know.
Right. Sure.
And that shouldn't be replaced with water.
Well, speaking of that, I mean, in terms of varietals and flagship varietals that are really going to, you know, take Croatia and Slovenia wines to another level. Like last year, I spent a month in Chile, and their flagship varietal is Carmenere. And making wines of 100% of one varietal, really giving a distinction to that particular country. What are some of the wine varietals that are doing quite well, or that are very approachable from an international palate, that are very traditional at the same time?
Mm-hmm. Well, everybody knows by now in the wine world that Zinfandel is coming from Croatia, and has been traced about 15 years ago, and his book's written about that. And
what about Primitivo? Isn't that Italian?
Come on. let's cut Italians some slack here. So that's a big one, and
what is that called in
Croatia? It's called Plavac Mali, and it's actually because Croatia has 1,200 islands, and since they're all very old and they haven't been cultivated as much, they've grown pretty wildly. It's kind of hard, and you know, you have that and the microclimate, and you know, the wind going all over the place. These vines are kind of having sex with each other too much, and you have many varietals coming that are kind of clones of one on the other. But specifically, it's called Crljena Kaštelanski, which I'm not going to bother people to know to pronounce that. So, but in general, it's Plavac Mali, and that's
Plavac Mali. Okay,
that's the Zinfandel. And it's coming from the coast, from the southern coast.
What region is that?
Well, that's from the coastal region. Croatia is basically divided by two, the continental and the coastal, and it's all down south. And mm-hmm. lots of islands, Island of Hvar, Pelješac, Primošten, where Babić is grown. And these wines are all coming from very, very old vines, 100 and plus. Like, mm-hmm. this is incredible. When you go there, you can't believe these vineyards. It's pretty much... You can't even see vines. There's so little. I mean, they're so scattered around. And I was there last year and talking to one of the winemakers, and he says there's not a rock in this vineyard. There's not a spill of blood on it, because it's so sharp. And it just, there's no machinery going into any of our vineyards. It's all hand harvest. It's all hand picked. It's basically every single day you have to go and work. There's no such thing as, you know, cutting any mm-hmm. Corners in the vineyard. So it's very, very hard to do that. And Zinfandel specifically yields very low. We're talking about regular, yields, we would say about 5 kilos per vine mm-hmm. in your Pinot Grigio, or maybe even more.
Sure.
Let's cut Italians some slack, so again. but in our vineyards, it's the other way. It's 5 vines per kilo.
Oh, that's incredible.
So yeah, if you do the math, that's incredible. So you're using a lot of space where there's practically very few vines growing. So the extraction is very deep, and that's where I believe in Zinfandel, which particularly it's, you know, our varietal shows potential in lower alcohols, where rather than in California, I'm not going to say it's bad, but they have to go through a lot more alcohol to achieve the success of Zinfandel, where ours is more terroir driven, more acidity, where still enough sun to balance all that and not overpowered overpower the palate, you know. So that would be one of them. Also, you know, international, more some in the continental climate would be Zweigelt in both countries.
Okay.
Blaufränkisch, even more north than, you know, Pinot Noir is getting big.
And of the Welsh Riesling as
Welsh,
well.
And whites, Croatia is big on Welsh. It's pretty much about 70% of production is Welsh Riesling. It's called Graševina there. And it's particularly great because we have, as I say, our vineyards are all hilly. And we can allow these vines to ripen a little longer. Welsh Riesling is very underappreciated. Even in our vineyards, was a blending varietal, and people didn't really care for that as much. But when you give it a lot of potential, when you really extract lots of it, lots of that,
treat it royally.
Yes. Then you get great results, and that's an ideal wine for late harvest because it has lots of acidity. So, and you need to really work hard with it. So now we're showing great results from guy like Inyingi, which is from Slavonia. I mean, I believe that we have the best Welsh Riesling in the world. I think there's nothing even close to that. It's very, it's very Buitritis, which is noble rot, and still very, very acidic and beautifully balanced on the palate at a high alcohol level.
Wonderful. Well, we're going to take a quick break and just want to thank our sponsor, Edwards, fine purveyors of smoked ham. Thank you, and be right back. That was a little piece called Lightning Song by Queens of the Stone Age. We're here at the root of it with Krešo Petrković of Vinum Imports, importers of Croatian and Slovenian wines. Just talking a little bit about Croatian history with respect to winemaking, and one of the things that comes up as these wines are making more and more progress across the world is how they're able to be kept affordable, given the low yields, the high quality. Is land inexpensive? Is labor inexpensive? Or are you guys making any money?
But not being greedy.
Right. Fair questions, though. I mean,
That's how you make inexpensive wine, is not by not being greedy. If you go to Robert Mondavi Vineyards, I mean, how much wine is in that bottle, you know? Mm-hmm. So, you know, they're overcharging for wine. And I know exactly how much wine is worth. And I love to drink great wine, but I refuse to pay high prices for it because it really takes away from the beauty of what wine is all about. It's not a glamorous thing. It's something that should be, I mean, of course, if you're going to pay for something that is incredible and old. And of course, there's makes sense, but it's kind of like I feel like I'm being tricked a lot of times, you know. So that's what's great about this, and they're not as cheap as your regular Pinot Grigio or something like
right,
that.
Right, right.
But they are well priced. I mean,
for land and labor are still, like, it's comparatively speaking, to say, you know, Napa Valley, for instance, quite reasonable. So those factors all kind of go into the price, or no?
No, it's just, you know, that the winemakers, as I said, they all work. When you have the whole family that goes every day, you know, and gets up and works all day, that's another story, you know. I was there for, I'm probably the only guy also that, you know, goes over there and helps out. I'm there for like 2 months out of a year, 3 months out of a year.
Right.
The sommelier guy that comes from New York, those sommeliers over there don't want to work, you know. I go and put my pants on.
Hey, I've done it before, and I worked.
I know you did. That's why I'm here with you. That's why.
That's true.
But, you know, that's the kind of thing. So they work hard, and...
And they love it. It's life.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's incredible. Yeah. Listen, when you go over there, you cannot believe. It's one of my best times I ever spent on this planet was with these guys. And I play music and everything, and I love, you know, hanging out with musicians. But I always tell them, there's no such artist as the winemaker. They're really true to what they do. And when they're the good at it, it's the best.
Yeah. And the use of oak, what kind of oak are they using with respect to aging the reds? And I know it's a very balanced... not overly oak, but you certainly still have the character that comes out in the wines.
Yeah, there definitely was like a period of, as pretty much everywhere in the world, to go with oak and the barrique, but our oak is all coming pretty much from Slavonia.
Okay.
Which is usually, let's mention that, is a very important factor. I just had a dispute with one of the wine directors. They said, well, you sent me wine from Slavonia, and they said it was from Slavonia, and that's where the difference is. Not, it's,
yeah, let's
all
talk about that, because it's easy to be misheard. Slovenia is, you know, the wine producing region, and then you have the Slavonia oak.
Slavonia is a region in Croatia. It's northeast, is where the if you remember Vukovar bombing and all that, that's where that region is, and it's very far away from Slovenia. It's all the way east.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the famous oak come from,
okay.
where all your, you know, Brunellos and Barolo was aged.
Yeah, it's around. It's a lot of people are using that.
Yeah, it's very neutral. It's beautiful oak. Uh-huh. That's why you have that kind of a
and
nice,
more reasonably priced than, you know, new French oak, or around the same.
Yeah, and it's not going to be as expensive for sure, but, you know, it's just the way you go. People use French oak as well. There's very little people that use American oak. There's not. I'm sure there's somebody maybe, but. Slavonian oak is the way to go, and large barrels.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I like to, you know, drink these days, because it's kind of rare, you know, to do a production of many different varietals in large barrels, and, you know, top all that, and, you know, make sure it doesn't oxidize too much. And that's a cool thing about especially whites that are coming out of the Northeast.
And what are we drinking here? This is a...
This is Malvasia from Kozlovic, which is one of the top producers from Istria, and this guy is kind of a flagship guy of this varietal, I believe, in the world right now, because it's also underrated varietal, and the Italians make it kind of like, okay, here's Malvasia, where these guys are making it
they
blend it a lot, but these guys are taking it very seriously. It's something that's what I say to everybody, if, you know, in line of Chardonnay, but more there's more apple kind of things going on, and as I say, very traditionally made, and, you know, no oak, but you kind of feel like there's some oak going on over here, and it's just
rich.
A little,
maybe it has a little more extension with the lees. It kind of sits on that a little bit.
They like to do that over there. Yeah, they definitely do. Pretty much all our wines are kind of like Surly method then filtered, which is, people don't know, that's an extended period when the wine is sitting on the lees for maybe like, you know, 10 or 15 days, and then they filter that, so you don't have those particles in there. But
lees are expired yeast.
Just for reference. But that's what's going on with this. That's why it has a little bit more kick there. But yeah, this guy is presenting one of the best examples of Malvasia, and Istria is famous for truffles, and that's kind of a great wine to have with truffles if you can ever for that.
Yeah, these seem like great food wines. They have good acidity, but they have a nice richness.
Sure.
Kind of seemingly Mediterranean inspired, that could go with a lot of different types of food.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what another aspect of our food is. You know, I kind of get upset when I go there. It's everybody's like, oh, you know, I'm the best chef. there's no chefs over there, you know. There's chefs that are in the capital and over there. But when you go to the coast where you eat incredible food because everything is grown in somebody's backyard or it's pulled out of water. And our fish is not cheap. It's kind of expensive when you go. I go there and I have a kind of a good budget when I go there and travel through all these wine areas. But it's very much emphasizing the product. Like, just here's the fish, here's the wine. Sit in the sit outside in the middle of the vineyard. That's pretty much what you get. And there's a lot of that going on everywhere. And I really believe that they shouldn't change that. You know.
Is wine a part of everyday culture there?
Oh, my God.
Is every meal it's consumed?
We killed that.
Yeah, yeah.
We took that to another level over there. We have a, it's kind of an alcohol problem going on over there.
Oh, like, really? Okay. Well, people that's another topic.
Yeah, it's not bad, but people drink a lot of wine. It's, you have it with, as I said, my dad introduced me to not only wine, but took me to all the wine competitions. Says you should be doing this because this is something that you're not going to get stirred wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And I know a lot of my friends that are went the other way and didn't end up too good. You know,
right?
So
with some of the you distribute these wines in New York City and nationally, or just right now in New York?
Yeah. Well, yeah. Exactly. We're doing this. We started the company about 5 years ago and slowly started growing and growing and growing. There was a lot of doors, that we needed to open because people were very skeptical about it. Like, Croatia makes wine. I've never heard of that, So we actually established the first relationship with the retailer that's going to have our wines all over the country, and that's Columbus Circle Wines. And thanks to Steve, Phil, and Laurent over there.
Love them.
I love these guys. They introduced us to the great world of wines. I'm sure everybody at some point bought a best bottle of wine there, and
great selection.
They have great palates, and they really understand what's going on. And I believe that we need to be edgy in the wine world, and show
keep reinventing it.
Yes, yeah. And show new things. Because
you can get these at the retail store, Columbus Circle Wines, but you can also find them on restaurant lists. And where do you feel like most people are buying in terms of successes that you've had with respect to placements in restaurants for different types of food? That would be a good pairing.
Okay, so we have about 170 restaurants. I believe it's all over the place. Of course, all the reds, the very high extracted reds, steakhouses, because this is very much like Zinfandel. It would be almost like Amarone, with a little bit less alcohol, but extraction is very, very high.
Mm-hmm.
Not in the cellar, more in the vineyard. So it's a wine that definitely needs a lot of protein and a lot of, good amount of fat, and it's just a heavy wine with a lot of alcohol. And all the other wines are just totally wine friendly because especially in whites. I believe I'm a big, big advocate of white wines with food. I'm a big advocate of wine, period, because people kind of forget about white wines a lot of times. And I went to the wine country and I was looking at the people that were kind of like drinking too much of reds. And I said, let's do a wine dinner with only white wines. And we went from steak to just all white wine from one producer. And it was just incredible. Everything paired so well. So, we have plenty of places here. From Felidia was a big friend of us, at the beginning, Lidia Bastianic, which is coming from Istria. Where the Kozlovic is making this wine, the one that we have right now, and she definitely helped us introduce, the wines to the public, and so.
Also a big supporter of Heritage Meats.
Oh, great!
The Bastianich family. Yep.
Yeah, they're fantastic. Mm-hmm. They do a great job, and they they're definitely keeping the legacy going.
Great.
Yeah.
Great. Well, good to know. Thank you so much for your time and for coming out, and hopefully we'll put together an event sometime in the future where we can showcase these wines and do a dinner and pair them alongside meats and fish and see how they pair up. It's exciting.
Absolutely. I just want to mention, if you guys ever want to check out our wines, definitely check out columbuscirclewines.com. We have our entire portfolio over there, and we'll be doing tastings very, very very close in the future, we're going to have a few tastings in great event spaces. And if you go on that website, you will be able to see it.
Thanks again. And thanks, Edward, specializing in smoked hams. We close today with a little song by the Budos called Ambush. See you next week. Thank you.